Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
When I get on a plane, if I see people who are in Muslim garb, and I think, you know, they're identifying themselves first and foremost as Muslims, I get worried. I get nervous.
Juan feels the way he feels. That is not for me to pass judgment on. His feelings that he expressed on Fox News are really between him and his psychiatrist or his publicist or take your pick.
Right now, the whole world is watching Crystal Cathedral, and that, again, gives us an opportunity to show that God is a big, mighty, provisional God.
I'm reminded of great prophet Jeremiah, who did not have a crystal cathedral. He did not have much of a following. People didn't like him, but yet he was one of the Lord's great servants of the Word.
Duluth, Minnesota letter carriers love Issues Etc.
My new word of the day, I've decided, although I claim to have been using this word from my tender youth, jack wagon, and I've been using it a lot this afternoon, off the air, of course. Much occasion to use this epithet, which it's a pretty harmless epithet, if you stop and think about it. I could do worse, you know, behind the closed doors of LPR studio, still ringing in my ears, and Jeff takes his seat, ready to do his job on this Friday afternoon, October the 29th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Before we get started, Tom and Sue Simonson from Jackson, Michigan came by. We'd met them before at, I believe, a Brothers of John the Steadfast meeting, several of them in Naperville, Illinois, 2 Februarys running. It was very nice to see Tom and Sue again. They came by the LPR studio just because they're passing through. And hopefully we'll have a picture of them at our Facebook fan page here in due course, perhaps even during the show if I can multitask well enough. It's always listener email and Issues Etc. comment line to kick off Friday afternoons. We are coming to you live. Then we'll do Issues Etc. blog of the week. Jason Plummer will join us in the second hour. He's the Republican nominee for Lieutenant Governor of Illinois. We'll find out what he thinks about the upcoming race and next week's big vote, whether or not there can be political reform in the state of Illinois, known for its, what shall we say, hesitancy, resistance to political reform. We'll have audio open lines in the middle of the next hour. There's a message from Presiding Bishop Mark Hansen of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America to lesbian, gay, and bisexual and transgendered teens. He says, God made you this way. Don't worry, even though people are mean to you, there's a place for you in our church, and it will get better. We'll see what you think about that, your questions and comments, and your reaction to Bishop Hansen's public comments to GLBT, we'll just call it that, GLBT youth, during audio open lines in the second hour of the program. Then, as usual, soundbite of the week. We have, here's another word I haven't used in at least a couple weeks. We have four corkers. That's what I'll call it, corkers, this week. I like all four soundbites. I can get behind all four soundbites this week. Jeff is looking at me with a very puzzled look. Great soundbites is what I'm trying to say. For your consideration, you can go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find the four soundbites there, a way to listen, and then you can also vote for soundbite of the week in advance, or wait and vote live in about 90 minutes. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE. Send your vote in by email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send it to us as a tweet as @issuesetc.
Actually, my mind was spinning over a new donor premium, the Wilkin Dictionary.
That's not a bad idea.
Oh, I think we can get, what, $5,000 annual contributions for that.
You mean words that I use around here, that
corker,
that need definition?
Jack wagon.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I like it.
See, it constantly amazes me that people like you guys, you Illinois types, aren't familiar with any of these terms. I mean, these are just the As I said to Craig before we came on the air, this is just the parlance of our day. Any well-read person is going to be able to be conversant in words like jack wagon and corker. I think they're self-explanatory, actually.
Well,
Craig doesn't think so.
Yeah, Craig and I beg to differ. Hey, a couple things that of the inane category.
All right. Since we're on that, in that vein already.
Yes, yeah. Randy in Duluth, Minnesota, the letter carrier that sent the thing. What was that horn? I mean, is that like the horn that the Minnesota Vikings play? The Viking guy? The
sounded
plays
like
at
one
games?
Of those. What were those things they were playing during the World Cup? The Wazuli frittatas? Those things, the horns they were playing. It sounded like one of those. Maybe it was one of those. I mean, they didn't say that it was actually a truck horn or a car horn. It might have been one of those, whatever they're called, those horns.
Yeah, that's a very masculine horn from the United States Postal Service these days.
Deep, throaty horn. Yeah. Well, we cleaned it up a little bit. It had a little bit of crackle in there, and I think it sounds great in the opening montage.
Memo needs to go out before racing down the studios, the hall here. I visited our luxurious lavatory. Toilet seat was down. Mark the calendar. Toilet seat was down.
It might have been our visitors. That happens occasionally.
I think it's Craig.
I think it's Craig, too. I think he's getting back at you. I think this is some passive aggression.
Your thought was the same as mine, and I looked it up. It's a vuvuzela.
Vuvuzela. Thank you very much. That's what it sounded like, a vuvuzela.
You notice how he completely avoided the whole issue of the toilet seat being down. He changed the subject on us.
No, he was just on the old subject. Craig, he won't allow this show to proceed without clarification on every point. He wants to make sure everything is clarified.
That's right.
Vuvuzela, thank you.
You want to get some email?
Yeah, let's do
it. All right. This comes from Michelle. She says, I'm an on-demand listener and wanted you to know that the October 7th segment on in vitro fertilization was very offensive. To be perfectly candid, while I have never used IVF, I know well many people who have and are. My main concerns are Dr. Morse's lack of concern for the infertile married couple and her throwing the baby out with the bathwater mentality. While I would agree that there are a lot of problems with many of the ways that IVF is used, creation of embryos that never get used, single people using it to have children of their own, homosexuals using it to have children, using a donor egg or sperm, the use of porn to help produce the sperm, etc., I don't think it is across the board unethical just because sex is not the means of placing the sperm with the egg. There are ethical ways of pursuing IVF. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse's Roman Catholicism is speaking here. Her words harken back to the old Roman Catholic teaching that sex is only for procreation and you are not supposed to enjoy it and vice versa. You have had her on the show several times degrading couples who do not have children, calling them selfish, immature, and other things. Now you have her on the show telling those selfish and immature married couples who can't have children by other means that their only hope of having a physical manifestation of their one flesh union is wrong on all accounts. And I'm paraphrasing here. I can't read the entire email. Surplus embryos is indeed a problem and the biggest reason I would never pursue IVF in this country. I have heard of another country where only a maximum of 2 or 3 eggs would be fertilized at a time. If all 3 took to the attempt at fertilization, then all 3 would be implanted. No leftover children waiting in frozen concentration camps, as an ethics professor of mine once said. I think this is the best course of action for a Christian married couple to pursue. There's also an effort among Christians to reduce the number of frozen embryos via embryo adoption. This way, the baby's embryos do not need to stay frozen indefinitely or discarded or destroyed in any way. This is by no means an excuse to create surplus embryos, but a way to try to deal with the surplus we have today. Todd, I don't think this is iffy ethically if we build the correct barriers and stipulations on IVF. In conclusion, I think perhaps you ought to consider Dr. Morse's Roman Catholic bias and perhaps allow someone to question Dr. Morse rather than just accept everything she says, hook, line, and sinker. People who have children easily cannot possibly understand the heart of those that don't. The way Dr. Morse came across in this segment, and Todd too on occasion, I'm afraid to say, sounded very high and mighty. All the people I know who have or are using IVF, with one exception, whom I am not in agreement with, are married. And all couples are infertile heterosexual couples. The saying, you will catch more flies with honey, goes here too. There is no care, no sympathy for infertile couples. The entire segment came across as a high-handed judgment with lots of unproved suppositions, though it had always been out of question for me before. After hearing this segment, I think if it comes down to it, I will most definitely consider IVF now. provided I can find a doctor that would only fertilize two eggs at a time. Additionally, I think that perhaps all your segments dealing with how married couples ought to have more children should show more care and concern for couples who want to but can't, writes Michelle.
Well, look, if it's against your conscience, don't do it out of spite, Michelle. If it's against your conscience, don't do it. Don't do it just because what you heard on this show kind of raised a little peak with you, really. Now, there are a couple things here. Dr. Morse may be ethically opposed to IVF in principle. I don't know if that's the case. I think she actually allowed for the fact that there could be an ethical way of doing this. That is, with regard to the surplus embryos. I did not hear her saying that in each and every case it is unethical. And I've argued many times. I mean, if you listen to the show, we've done that topic many, many times. I've argued, and so have other guests, that IVF in and of itself is not unethical. The technology in and of itself is not unethical, but the way it is being practiced is. And Michelle, good luck finding a doctor who will only implant a single or two embryos. Good luck. Because IVF nowadays is big money. And in order to get the big money, you got to have big results. So, you know, if you can find one, Godspeed. Now, I agree, there are ethical ways to do it. Unfortunately, most places that offer IVF aren't interested in them because they don't have, what, return on investment, so to speak. I think Dr. Morse's concerns are that, are not for IVF in particular, but for this notion, number one, that childbirth, having children, is an entitlement. That there's no such thing as infertility that can't be cured by our ingenuity, and that sometimes it may be God's will for a couple to remain childless. She's also concerned with the mentality of manufacturing the next generation. I'll say more on the other side of the break.
Oh, yeah, such a liberty letter. The sooner the better. You gotta wait a minute, wait a minute.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
No consultants necessary. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Have you ever wanted to know about the origins of Issues Etc.? Did you know church leaders were opposed to teaching the laity Reformation theology? Check out our new YouTube video, You Can't Teach Lay People Theology, issuesetc.org, and click support. Equipping the priesthood of all believers. Watch the short YouTube video, You Can't Teach Lay People Theology, today. Just go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line on this Friday, October the 29th. A couple more thoughts before we go on to the next listener. I think it was Michelle who sent the email about the IVF. She talks several times about Dr. Morse's Roman Catholic bias. There's nothing inherently Roman Catholic about some people's objection in principle. I don't know if Dr. Morse objects in principle, that is, in completely to IVF. I don't know that whether she does or not. But there's nothing inherently Roman Catholic about that ethical objection. That I know a fair number of Lutheran pastors who reject IVF in principle because they feel as though it is an, what shall we say, can it be, they wonder whether it can be done in good conscience given the possibility that you are putting this child inherently at risk by the technology, that you are fertilizing the egg outside the womb, and then in the technology it requires to implant the egg, adding extra risk to this child's life that has already begun, not to mention all the problems with surplus embryos that are part and parcel of the industry, whether we like it or not. But let me, I'll just clarify and say neither I nor Dr. Morse intended to say in any way whatsoever that people who are infertile should just, you know, just go home and deal with it. No, there are means of dealing with infertility. Although I do need to say that infertile couples ought to at least consider the possibility that this infertility is, well, their life together. It doesn't mean that their life is over, that infertility may in fact not have an ethical, technical solution. Technological solution. We've come to believe that everything can be fixed. So my wife's car is chugging this morning. What do? We know how to fix that. It's a peculiarity of the engine. We get the oil changed. Ba-boom, it's fixed. And we expect it to be fixed $40 and 1 hour later. And what Dr. Morse is concerned about is the tendency to believe that we can fix everything, even perhaps childlessness. And the tendency of many to consider childbirth an entitlement. I think those are her bigger concerns. And I do apologize if it came across as though we were saying that we were insensitive to infertility or that there's no possible ethical way of using this technology to help infertile couples. I don't think either of us actually said that, but I do apologize that we were careless enough in the way that we discussed it that it could be heard that way.
Here's Paul in Michigan. As you well know, it isn't enough in theology and apologetics to simply state what is true. You also have to refute that which is false. This is something that Issues Etc. usually does very well. You not only review good Christ-centered cross-focus sermons, but you also review sermons which either confuse law and gospel or omit the gospel altogether. You also generally do this as well in your topical theological discussions. However, there is one area in which your programming is severely lacking, review of bad hymns. When I still had my congregation, this was one area which was a frequent battle. I can't tell you how many times in different ways I tried to explain to my congregation why their favorite Look at Me, I'm Praising Jesus type of hymns, I like that, Look at Me, I'm Praising Jesus type of hymns, were not to be preferred over proper hymns, which explicitly spell out the things which Jesus actually did to save us from our sins. My congregation would not listen. They preferred to think that I was culturally insensitive at best or racist at worst. I consider the neglect of bad hymns to be Issues Etc.'s biggest error at the moment. I can imagine your neo-Methodist Lutheran listener hearing your hymn reviews and thinking, well, that Whedon character sure gets excited over those Lutheran hymns, but what really excites me are those hymns which praise me instead of God. I look forward to hearing you fix this glaring error of omission in your programming, writes Paul.
Okay, so can I ask for some clarification from either you or Craig? Probably you, since you read the email. What Paul is suggesting is that as we review bad sermons, we should review bad hymns just like we review good hymns, in essence. Yes. I think we actually have done that on a couple occasions.
Not since we've been back.
No, not since we've been back, but I do remember doing a remote with Leonard Payton once where we went through, what was it, the top, not the top downloaded, but the top used, copyright reported hymns used by Christian congregations, and we went through a number of them in the course of 2 hours and we reviewed them. We could certainly do that. We could spend 5 hours a week doing that. There's so much fodder out there about how bad the hymns are. Now, I can guarantee you that Pastor Whedon, if I can, I don't presume to speak for him, but if you said, hey, Will, do you want to come on review The King of Love, My Shepherd Is, or Lord, Thee I Love With All My Heart, or do you want to review The Days of Elijah, or any of the other popular praise songs? He's going to want to go with the good hymns, because to review the negative is certainly instructive. It's certainly instructive. But a guest like that is probably going to say, but I'd much rather deal with good material than simply point out what is should be obviously bad material.
Well, I didn't read all of Paul's email. It's an excellent suggestion that we get some of our former evangelicals who are now Lutheran pastors to review some of the popular praise and worship music. And you heard me, just last week I called Dr. Leonard Payton, and that's what we were planning on doing actually before we got this email. So Dr. Leonard Payton, who used to be an evangelical, then went from evangelicalism to Calvinism, is now an LCMS pastor, a Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod pastor, church musician as well, will be on in the near future to review some of the top praise and worship songs according to CCLI. What's that stand for? It's the licensing.
Christian Copywriting Licensing, whatever. I recently looked it up. And yeah, they keep a top 25 that runs February to August of every year. And I actually went through the lyrics of the top 25 recently for a different project I was working on. And what I was looking for was any mention of the Trinity. And in the top 25, it just might be interested to hear, Paul, in the top 25 of contemporary Christian songs that are used in Christian congregations, and we know they're being used because their use is being reported copyright-wise. Only one, top 25, only one mentioned the Trinity. Only one. A single mention of the Trinity.
Here's an email from Jeff in Minnesota. He says, it's a ship horn. This is regarding the Duluth, Minnesota letter carrier.
Oh, wasn't it a truck horn?
It's a ship horn in Duluth, morons. Duluth is on one of the big, big lakes, writes Jeff in Minnesota.
Ah, but can he tell us which big, big lake? Sounds like he was searching there.
How, like you said during the break we were talking about this, how in the world can we go from a letter carrier to a ship horn? I mean, because he was driving past one of the lakes and
look, I just don't think that it – I think of letter carriers as driving in trucks or walking. And when I hear a horn, I'm going to assume a truck horn or a car horn. Most letter carriers – maybe we should have been tipped off by Duluth, but most letter carriers don't go by boat. But if he did, it really makes that little horn all the better, doesn't it? But the guy who called it in didn't give us any way of knowing that he was on a boat. And we probably should have known that they deliver the mail, apparently, in Duluth by boat. I didn't know this. Apparently, all the letter carriers travel around in boats.
You know, this could have been the perfect piece of polemical email had he replaced morons with jackwagons.
I agree.
You know?
I think that his email would have been markedly improved.
Instead of calling us morons, jackwagons.
Probably would have been pushed up to the top of the pile where we put the most, you know, the most critical of the email. We always like to get to criticism first. If he would have just, come on, morons is pretty overused. Jackwagons, that catches my attention.
Speaking of critical email, here's some more. This is Robert in St. Louis. I listened with interest to Pastor Wanitzer's comments about the Crystal Cathedral's troubles. I had one critique concerning his comments. Toward the end of the interview, he said that we cannot rejoice over the bankruptcy of the Crystal Cathedral. I understand his desire to be kind toward those folks is a normal pastoral response, even if not well considered. I think his kindness is misplaced, though. In order to explain, I would make a comparison. Suppose an abortion clinic had financial difficulties and had to go out of business. Should I not rejoice over this? What the Crystal Cathedral has been doing to people for decades is spiritual abortion or spiritual euthanasia. My kindness is reserved for their victims, not for the purveyors of false and damnable errors. Let them go out of business. It is not soon enough. I hope their victims might find a sound church where Christ crucified for each of us is preached each week. Thanks for the email, and thanks for listening in St. Louis, Robert.
Robert, I understand what you're saying. I think what Pastor Zwanitzer was trying to say, and I think he did it well enough, was that when he said we don't want to rejoice over the bankruptcy, I think he was probably referring to the many people who would lose their livelihoods as a consequence of the Crystal Cathedral's bankruptcy. People who, yes, they've been involved in the ministry there, but still they're losing their livelihoods. You don't want to rejoice over anyone losing their livelihood. You may want their livelihood to you may want them to change livelihoods, but you don't want them to lose it. I think that's probably what I meant, but I understand completely what you're trying to say, and I think you're absolutely right in your diagnosis that in the spiritual sense, the false teaching of the Crystal Cathedral is as dangerous as any deadly industry, no doubt about it. And we certainly, I think what we would like to say is that the voice of false teaching be silenced altogether. And we could certainly pray for that. When we come back from this break, wow, halfway through the first hour already on this Friday afternoon, October the 29th, some more listener email. Do we have comment line? Any comments waiting for us? Oh, we do. Good. We got a comment from one of our listeners, and then Issues Etc. blog of the week. Don't you assume they're gonna buy just anything, 'cause when we're out in the clubs listening to music, you're in a box, sex up in $5 million, yeah. Do Lutherans just follow the teachings of Martin Luther? How is Lutheranism similar and different from historic churches like Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is Lutheranism 101. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Lutheranism 101 by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Is it possible to be evangelical and Catholic? Lutheranism 101.
Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A generational shift offers pro-life encouragement.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The National Abortion Rights Action League, known as NARAL, recently conducted a survey examining the views of young Americans on abortion. To their disappointment, they found that while young pro-lifers called abortion a very important voting issue, only 26% of young abortion advocates viewed it that way. Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL, related her chagrin over this issue in a Newsweek article, expressing her fear that the abortion movement is dominated by women over 50 and that younger people are not ready to fill the ranks the way they are in the pro-life movement.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
So tell me why.
We're going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line on this Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, blog of the week. In the second hour of the program, Jason Plummer will join us. He's Republican nominee for lieutenant governor of Illinois. We'll talk about the race for governor and lieutenant governor. Actually looks like there might be some change in a state that really, really needs some change. Audio open lines follows that. The presiding bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America has said to gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered teens, God made you that way. Don't worry, there's a place for you in our church. And he's talking about not through repentance, the way the rest of us sinners enter the church. We'll play the audio for you, then we'll get your reaction for audio open lines, then Issues Etc., soundbite of the week.
Dennis emails us, says the lake in question is Lake Superior, the queen of the Great Lakes.
Okay, good, good. Lake Superior, because it's on top of all the others.
Yes.
All right, so It did sound a lot like a foghorn, didn't
it? Yes, yeah.
That's what we said.
So I think the Vikings, you know, the Viking, the little mascot, you know, he's got that big long horn. Looks like those the things the Jews play.
Yeah, but it's not a bazooli.
What's that called?
A shofar.
A shofar, yeah.
Why on how could it be, if you would have woke me up this morning and said, at 3:30 this afternoon, you guys are going to be talking about the terminology for various horns and musical instruments on the show.
And yet we still bill the show as talk radio for the thinking Christian. Go figure.
Yeah, you would not be able to tell by listening on Fridays, at least the first hour on Fridays. Okay, so that's correcting what's going on in Duluth, our geography. It's not great. Anything else there by way of email?
Oh,
we've got lots of email.
Here's a question from Matthew via Facebook. Could you send me a message when something I post is inappropriate for the Issues Etc. Facebook fan page? I am curious why my post with a correction about the show with Dr. Paul Grimm was removed. I thought it would be useful for listeners. I'm sorry if it was the wrong venue for that, writes Matthew.
Okay. First of all, Matthew, I probably should have sent you a message answering your question. And then what I usually do is I monitor the Facebook fan page. This is a three-man operation. Jeff and Craig have a lot to do. Me, not so much. So I get kind of the webmaster duties. Now, we have a lot of fans on the Facebook fan page. We're up above 5,100 now. And that means that people sometimes abuse the privilege and they'll put something on there just to kind of get it out in front of 5,100 eyes. That will be taken down. We don't allow the Facebook fan page to be used to promote your own thing. It's our fan page, get your own fan page kind of a thing. Then if you, let's see, use it for irrelevancies, that is, post something that is not relevant to the show in any way whatsoever, that'll get taken down. These are my own personal policies. I feel free to change them at whim and at will. If you, in the course of one of the comment discussions that's going on there, start picking on somebody or start being mean or any of those kind of thing, I'll take it down. If you put it back up, I'll take it down again. Okay? It's just going to happen. I'm going to keep doing it as long as you keep doing it. So, and if you do it long enough, probably find a way of blocking you. That's just, we're trying to maintain a nice place there. And in that vein, part of the reason that posts that do relate to the show, but probably would be better sent as an email to us for Friday afternoons, those ones will occasionally get taken down. What I usually do is respond to it so that the message goes out, then I take it down. And that's just for keeping it's really simple. It's for keeping the Facebook fan page uncluttered with things. We use it for a lot of things in the course of a week, and we want to keep it as uncluttered as possible. We want to hear from our listeners. And if our listeners want to correct something, we want to hear from them. The absolute best way to do that is to send us an email. And what Jeff will usually do, he gets all the email. If it's relevant to something a guest said, he will forward it on to the guest. He'll forward it to me. Sometimes he'll respond himself. Absolutely the best way to communicate that stuff. Facebook fan page, not always the best place to do it. But we don't want to discourage our listeners from at least trying. If you get taken down, don't be offended. It's nothing personal whatsoever. It's just that there's probably a better venue. You can send a message as well. Let's hear from what our listeners have to say on the Issues Etc. comment line.
This is Herman calling on Tuesday, October 26th, which is also my 63rd baptismal anniversary, following up a footnote on Jonathan Mummey's presentation regarding the environment of the University of Tübingen. I would venture to say that it is not a bastion of Lutheran orthodoxy. In other words, Dr. Krauth, Dr. Herman Saucy, and Dr. Kurt Marquardt would not be welcome there in the fullest. Let's put it that way. And I'm reminded that one of your frequent guests, Dr. Martin Nolan, had done a study period out at the seminary in New York City called Union Theological Seminary, where he reported on the standard aberrations that go on within that precinct. So it was certainly astounding to hear Jonathan Mummy hold Lutheran orthodoxy in that environment. Just a footnote there. Thank you.
Well, and thank you, and congratulations on the baptismal birthday. That's always nice to hear from all of our listeners, smartest listeners in radio. And I think we should point out, I think we did mention in the course of that conversation with, what was Mummy's first name? It escapes me right now, Jeff.
Dr. Jonathan Mummy.
Okay. He is getting his doctorate from the University of Tübingen. He's not on faculty, as far as I know, or any of those kinds of things. He's simply getting his doctorate there, and I think availed himself very nicely in the course of that conversation. You know, we love our listeners. We love all our guests. We love first-time guests that hit it out of the park. And we haven't had Jonathan on before, have we? No, we haven't. I really like it when first-time guests hit it out of the park. He did. He absolutely did. And he did it, by the way, via Skype, which is nice. I mean, it's nice to have another way of doing it. It was the best way to communicate with him at that particular time of day here and there. By the way, our Issues Etc. comment line is open to anyone, all of you. Criticism, as you can see, we're not afraid of the criticism. We always put it at the top. Criticism, questions, comments, show suggestions, idle inquiries, whatever you have, we want to hear it on the Issues Etc. comment line. 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. 8384.
Dana in Indiana, thanks so much for the excellent Reformation Week programming as well as the web extras. I always enjoy having more programs to listen to. Here's my question. During the segment on the presence of Christ with Pastor Paul McCain, I appreciated that you differentiated between Christ's omnipresence and Christ's presence for you in word and sacrament. Along those same lines, could you please explain Matthew 18, verse 20, "For where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I among them." Is this specifically referring to Christ's presence in word and sacrament when we gather for the divine service? I don't want to define it too narrowly or broadly as I used to understand it in a very fuzzy manner as an evangelical. It was kind of like he was there in a special way when at least two of us were gathered together to pray, have Bible study, etc. What this special way was, I didn't really know. Your thoughts are appreciated. Thanks for the email, and thanks for listening in Indiana, Dana.
Well, the exegetical question there, of course, is what does it mean to be gathered in his name? He doesn't say when two or three of you get together, I'm there. He says when two or three of you are gathered in my name. Now, he's arguing from the minimum to the maximum. He's saying that it does not take a lot of Christians getting together, that even when two or three are gathered in his name, he is in their midst. Now, to be gathered in Christ's name must be understood in terms of what he then gives his church to be gathered around. And here there is absolutely no question. He gives his church things to be gathered around, his institutions. We will, you know, for the sake of a better word, and I don't think anybody's come up with a better one, his sacraments, his preached word, baptism. These are the things that Christ explicitly gives his church, his supper, and his word of absolution. These are the things around which he gathers his church. Theologians have called them the marks of the church. So I think it's unmistakable Jesus here is using shorthand for when two or three are gathered around these things around which I gather them. It's kind of circular, but you understand where I'm going. So to be gathered in Christ's name is to be gathered around his word and his sacraments, and there we know he is present by those very means around which he gathers us. That's what he's talking about there. So this isn't Christians getting together in a holy huddle, and somehow the friction of them rubbing together creates a little Jesus spark that somehow flames up into Jesus' presence. No, this isn't about Christians in close proximity to one another. This is about Christians in close proximity to the means of grace. And I think we are on the firmest of exegetical grounds to make that case. And this is to be distinguished from his omnipresence. Jesus' omnipresence is not good news. The fact that Jesus is everywhere isn't good news. It simply means that's Santa Claus watching you while you're sleeping, watching you while you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good, so you better be good. That's not good news. The omnipresence of God in the Bible is always treated as a very fearful thing. People fleeing, trying to flee from it, and there he is, waiting for them where they thought they could hide. However, his presence, his merciful presence, in his word and his sacraments, where there is forgiveness and mercy at the hand of this God, is always good news. When we come back, a little more email, then blog of the week.
Oh, the lonely days are gone. I'm coming home. Well, my baby, she wrote me a letter.
Here's a great resource for Sunday school teachers. Mondays, we interview Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House about the upcoming Growing in Christ Sunday school lesson. You'll find these interviews under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Listen to a 20-minute interview with Pam Nielsen, and you'll be prepared to teach Sunday school this weekend. Issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for Teaching a Sunday School Lesson with Deaconess Pam Nielsen.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Putting Christ back into Christian radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has so many blessings, but one blessing we've missed out on is repentance.
Old Missouri, fair Missouri, dear old Varsity.
They've forgotten quite a bit about what they were heard in the sermons, but they might have remembered every Sunday they prayed, Lamb of God, you take away the sin of the world.
George W. Bush is a Nose Brother. Bill Cosby is Brother Jella Nose. Billy Graham is Brother Nose Graham. Bob Hope is Brother Ski Nose. Dan Rather is Brother CBS Evening Nose.
Just a little taste of Soundbite of the Week coming up here in about an hour and 15 minutes on Issues Etc. Actually, it's coming up in more like an hour. An hour and 15 minutes will be the end of the show. So don't wait that long, please. In about 45 minutes, actually. Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. You can vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. It's a wonder I do radio, how poorly I calculate time. That's why we pay Jeff, I guess.
Hey, I got a question for you. You know how we, during the next hour, we'll run through all the sound bites. Let's not play Jeff's, and let's see if we can't get a live rendition.
That is a great idea.
Not going to happen.
Look, Craig just earned his Christmas bonus.
Not going to happen.
There's no doubt about it.
I never open the mic during hour two of the show, ever.
Why go with Jeff? You're always the one who's telling us that live in radio is where it's at. You don't play tape stuff if you can do it live. How many times has he said this, Craig? I mean, hundreds of times. When he hears, you know, other radio stations doing important stuff via tape, he's always like, "That's why people tune out." I don't know.
I disagree. I love our on-demand listeners. I don't care if they listen live or on-demand.
No. I'm not saying listening live. I'm talking about
producing a show.
Producing stuff
yeah,
live.
You got a point there.
Talking about your advertisers.
Not going to happen
live.
Both.
Asking for money live. Singing the Mizzou fight song What? Live.
I'm afraid if I do it live, it's just going to, you know, it's not a fair. It's not a fair vote.
Well, actually, you know, that's true.
It's not a fair election.
He could skew the vote because
it's
of sympathy.
Chads.
It would be sympathy. It would be, you know, listener sympathy rather than judging the thing on its merits. I do understand that. So
far, don't worry, boys. I have no votes. I've looked at Facebook. I'm trying. I sent an email blitzed out to my whole family to vote for me. Not a one. Here's an email from Gail in Des Moines, Iowa. She says, I've loved listening to your Reformation Week segments. I just finished listening to your Reformation Week installment on worship. Pastor Whedon talked about the liturgy being a protection against poor pastors. I really experienced this firsthand when I was deployed to Iraq in 2007. I had the choice between Protestant chapel, which was happy, clappy praise band and evangelical preaching, and Catholic chapel, which was traditional liturgy and evangelical preaching. I went to Catholic chapel, and I heard the gospel through the liturgy and the hymns, even though it was completely lacking in the sermons. The Catholic liturgy, which is largely unchanged since the Middle Ages, is still very similar to the traditional Lutheran liturgy, which Luther retained from the Catholic liturgy. Every week I got to sing the Gloria, the Sanctus, the Agnus Dei, recite the Nicene Creed, etc. My Lutheran pastor at home emailed me his sermons every week so that I could read them, and between that and participating in the liturgy and chapel, I received the gospel and was sustained during the time of hardship and separation from my family in Iraq. I also had the joy of worshiping with the whole Christian church through that shared liturgy. I just can't believe how many Lutheran churches are throwing away this treasure with both hands and replacing it with trite, gospel-less, meaningless drivel that points them to themselves and disconnects them from the rest of the church. As for me, let me sing along with angels, archangels, and all the company of heaven, concludes Gail in Des Moines, Iowa.
Wow, cannot say it better than that. Yeah, when push comes to shove, those things, those trite, what was it the earlier email said, look at me, I'm praising God kind of stuff, it will not sustain you in the course of life's real hardships. Well, yeah, when you're making six figures, living in the suburbs, your kids are all well-behaved, the dog always goes outside, and three cars in the garage, and life is good, then it's easy to feel or think you're being sustained by the trite fluff and flotsam and jetsam of contemporary worship. But when everything isn't just so, sometimes you need something a little bit more. Villa in Finland is online. Villa, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. This is Villa again. you had a program about St. Michael recently, and I had a comment on that because you talked about Michael being Jesus, and I had a conversation with Jehovah's Witnesses, and they believe that Saint Michael is Jesus, and so I did a little bit research on it, and first of all, Michael means who is like God, and that's not a proper name for Jesus because Jesus is God and is not like God. And the second thing is that when Jesus was confronted with Satan, he rebuked Satan. And in Jude, when Satan fought with Saint Michael over Moses' body, he couldn't rebuke Satan. He said, may the Lord rebuke you for it.
Villa, thank you very, very much. smartest listeners in radio and all of the world as well, thank you very much. Great way of going about answering that question. What was mentioned in the course of that subject on St. Michael and All Angels was that at times some of the reformers were willing to entertain the idea that Michael at times in Scripture might be the pre-incarnate Christ. Well, I think that Villa makes it clear that in those matters, Luther and the other reformers were not always right. Maybe they should have done a little more study. We treated him as a separate entity, Michael himself. And thank you very much. Thanks for listening in Finland.